session number 12224, Reel 2.
So I think, and I imagine that if you were in some of the forces, that you probably weren't shooting people, but I didn't want to, I would have refused to go into the forces. I think I would have stayed where I was in the civil service if I'd not been allowed to join the Friends Ambulance Unit. I was very thrilled to join the Friends Ambulance Unit, very keen.
What do you think it gave you, the Friends Ambulance Unit?
Well, it gave you a background where you were always accepted and not the odd man out to begin with, and some very interesting people, and a great deal of enthusiasm for what we were doing. My children have gone to work camps, Quaker work camps, and camps abroad, and have always been very enthusiastic about this. I always think that the FAU was like a long-term work camp. It was really very nice to work with a group of young people with whom you had so much in common and who were so interesting as people and as individuals. They were all committed to pacifism. Most of them were Christian. I suppose they all were, because I think we were asked that when we were interviewed for membership. And I found this very congenial. I think most of us did. I learned a great deal from being in the Friends Ambulance Unit and had opportunities that would never have come my way. Mind you, I think that some people found this in the army as well. They too had a war that opened their eyes to other experiences and widened their horizons. But I was very grateful for my time in the FAU, and I think most of us has felt that. I think it changed my life.
You were meeting a lot of Quakers, I imagine, were you?
Yes, and I always went to Quaker meetings, which we held every Sunday. I always attended and found it much more acceptable than any of the church services that I had previously been to.
What did you like about the sort of Quaker meetings?
There was no ritual about it. It was all very much involved with what you were doing. This used to surprise me in Friends meetings, when people would get up and actually talk about what they were doing that day in what seemed to me then a very casual basis. But I think it was very fine. I found it very impressive. I think the other thing that impressed me was when we had meetings of sections, of unit sections, and it got heated, and we would argue like mad, and it would be quite divisive. Somebody would say, let's have a few minutes silence. And after that, things went more smoothly. It gave time to everybody to think about what they were saying and consider the other person's point of view. And we usually came to decisions after that.
Sounds very democratic from what you're saying.
Yes, it was democratic. We had section leaders who were appointed by Gordon Square, but apart from that, it was democratic. We always made decisions jointly, as I recall now. I think so, yes. But from my 6 weeks in Hackney Hospital, I then went to Lichfield, to an EMS hospital in the grounds of a very large mental home.
What is an EMS hospital?
Emergency Medical Services. It was prefabricated buildings in the grounds of this large hospital. And I was on the operating theatre staff then, and I was the dirty nurse, the one that carried out the the organs that had been extracted and washing the gloves and cleaning the theatre. But it was interesting, and I found it interesting. I didn't ever faint or disgrace myself in the operating theatre. But the patients were wheeled out in the middle of winter, or any time of the year, in snow, from the operating theatre into one of these hutments for recovery, and the conditions were far from ideal. But we used to have operating lists several times a week, and the other days we would sort of actually be scrubbing the walls and everything within sight. And it's in a way that I don't think they do now.
How did the other nursing and medical staff treat you? Did they know you were a conscientious objector?
Yes, I don't think it ever made any difference. We were all doing the same job, and I don't think they minded. I think some of the men might have had more of an aggressive response from some of the nurses, but I certainly never did. When I went to that section, as I think there were only a few girls and quite a lot of men there.
Yes, it was interesting when you were saying earlier, Pip, you know, about the differences between men and women, and you felt it was easier for women to be COs. Do you think that, you know, this issue of sort of being a coward, that applies more to men than women?
Yes, I think it does. I think it does. I remember that whenever I was on holiday and in travelling in buses or trains, because people talked to each other much more during the war. If I would say I was a nurse in one of the London hospitals or anywhere come to that, people always respected that. Whereas I think if you were a man saying it, they may well not have done. They regarded the women as being pretty brave simply to be in London nursing, whereas the men they would regard as cowards because they were nursing. But on the whole, I think FAU sections had quite an enjoyable time together. I don't think there was too much friction. I think it was probably only an individual nurse or two who objected to the men being employed on their wards as orderlies. On the whole, I think they were welcomed, and they had a very friendly reception.
Your financial situation, did that alter as you left a job and went into the FAU?
Yes, I was on pretty low pay anyway. When I started in Harrogate, we were billeted. And I was on the minimum scale, I think, of a clerical officer. Well, I might have been one increment up. I think I earned about £105 a year. And I remember that I was below the scale at which they left you enough to survive on. We were provided with bed and breakfast and one meal. And I think I had to have some supplement at the beginning because I was not earning enough. But after the next increment, I think that disappeared, and I think I then was deemed to have enough to live on. But I was wealthy compared with what I was. I did save marginally. And when I joined the FAU, I was, of course, I don't think anybody asked me about members' assistance for the first few weeks, and I was wondering how long I could continue like this. When I was asked, and asked, I can't even remember if I asked. We had 25 shillings a week. No, we didn't. 25 shillings a month. A clothing allowance. I think it was £12 a year. I think members' assistance was 25 shillings a month, yes.
Are there any particular FAU women, you know, that you piled up with at this time?
Well, I think all the women that I worked with in every section, I've always been friendly with. There was no other FAU person at Hackney Hospital when I started working there. But I was, of course, living at Gordon Square, So I was with other Quaker women. When I was at the next hospital in Lichfield, the person whom I worked with briefly and then took over from in the theatre was Connie Bull, who went to China. She married Ron Condick and was then Connie Condick. She was very keen to get going, and I know it took her a very long time to actually get there.
The patients that you had in this EMS hospital, would they have been servicemen?
I think they were both. I remember having a lot of lists of women having hysterectomies. And I don't remember very, very, very many... Yes, I remember an amputation of leg. But on the whole, I think they were civilians. I expect there were some service people there, but I was not particularly conscious of them. I do remember that amputation of a leg, because it hung around for a long time, because the the registrar, or he could have been the houseman on the theatre, very much wanted to practice on it, and it was there for quite some time. And I also remember that operation because the sister had prepared the instruments, and the doctor had to saw through the femur, which is quite a large bone to saw through, and she had given him a very small saw, and he ordered in the middle of the operation, said it was inadequate, and wanted another saw, and she said, well, you can have the plaster saw, but I'll have to boil it up. And she insisted on boiling this saw up for 20 minutes before he could continue. And then he did.
It's quite a change for you, wasn't it, this sort of work?
Yes.
What you've been doing in the
yes.
post office.
Yes. It was a change, but I had, of course, worked in over a couple of years in the Red Cross, in a hospital. Yes, I think one of the most unpleasant things about it was the smell. We had a lot of children, and I think adults, with osteomyelitis. They were in plaster, and this had to be removed fairly, and I suppose it was renewed. But the smell of those patients was quite appalling, and it must have been very, very unpleasant for the patients. At that time, I don't know, I'm sure they use antibiotics on osteomyelitis now. I'm not sure what they use, but... at the time, they would plaster it and leave it, and the bones oozed all this pus, which really smelt very unpleasant.
Well, you were saying about Connie going to China eventually. Were you wanting to get abroad, Pip? Was this one of your...
Yes, I wanted to go in a medical team abroad as soon as possible, yes.
Had you applied for this? Did you?
Oh yes, I think that they were not sending any women. I didn't particularly want to go to China. I wanted to go to India very much. I was very keen on Mahatma Gandhi and Nehru, and I'd read quite a lot about India and the Indian the Congress Party and their fight for independence, and I very much wanted to work in India, but I wasn't sent there. I don't think I got the right sort of experience, really.
At this time, were you a Quaker? Had you joined
No, I joined the Society of Friends very much later. Eric joined in 1947, but I was an attender for a very long time. I had difficulties with believing in a personal God. And I didn't join the Society of Friends until about 20 years ago.
And you're quite sort of, as you say, you had a very raised political consciousness. I wonder, did that cause problems with sort of joining the Society of Friends? Because
no, a lot of them did have. I think a lot of people of my generation friends as well did have. I think the thing that the hallmark of friends is, I think, that they tend not to get quite so indignant. They're a little more pacific. But that there were also friends like Reginald Reynolds who did let rip, and quite a few did.
Yes, I was hearing about Reginald Reynolds from Tony Reynolds.
Ah, is he related?
Yes, I think so. I think they're cousins. Yes. He sounds quite a dynamic personality.
Yes, he was. He was, yes. I did, of course, go to quite a lot of meetings before the war, but I don't remember going to meetings very much during the war. I went to some the Socialist Society medical, now what were they called? Medical Socialist Society, I think. And I can't remember the names of any of those doctors now. That was when I was in a hospital in London. And I went to one of those meetings. One of the nurses invited me to go. And I said, oh, you don't have any notices up about it? And she said, no, but I'm the only one in this hospital that goes. And if they knew I went, I would spend all my time on the geriatric basement ward. So I had to keep a bit quiet about that, I thought. But that was when I was in London later. I'm trying to remember where I went after Lichfield. I think I went to London in a children's hospital. Is that right?
Yes, you were wanting to get abroad, were you, Pip, and do relief work or medical work?
Have I talked about it? Yes, I.
Yes, you have about India.
I have. I have. Yes, I wanted to. I wanted to be in a medical team, or particularly, I think I wanted to be in a relief team. I would very much like to have gone to the Middle East, or to Greece and Italy and Austria. I wanted to go back to Austria very much, or Germany. I was on the third training course at Mount Waltham. That was a large house in Hampstead where the FAU and FRS trained their workers for overseas who were going to do relief work specifically. And I was on the third course.
What sort of training would you have had? Can you remember for relief work? What would they have sort of...
We had quite a bit of Balkan history, I remember. I seem to think that Bertha Bracey talked to us, and Francesca Wilson. And I found this this pretty good. We were taught a lot about, well, we were taught hygiene, sanitation, German, field cooking. We all were given sort of an ounce of flour and a little knob of margarine or something and told to make our dinner for the day. And we had to sort of build ovens and fires and do this outside in the garden. I think we must have all been pretty hungry in the evening. We had talks, I think, from Bill Moore on hygiene and sanitation. It was on building camps and which end of the river you drank from and which end was the outflow for the latrines you had to build. We learnt about that sort of thing. I remember great chunks of readings from The Specialist, which was always very amusing and appropriate. I was taught German by Magda Kelber and by Douglas Scott. We were taught a lot about camps for displaced persons and refugees and how to deal with them and how to lock up the stores and ordering stores and how you should organise it and who you should have working for you and what you wanted of your workers and how you could pay them or were unable to pay them. I know we had a great deal of fun on that camp. We really enjoyed ourselves. We were in a few teams, and I started with the team leader was Margaret Thompson, who became a personal friend of mine. I remember Margaret Thompson mainly because we had I can't remember how many beds there were in this rather bare room with nothing on the floor, and sort of, as I recall, just these beds. And she had a black silk nightie and some very glamorous underwear, which I'd never seen before. And I found this very incongruous. And she was a lovely person, Margaret. She was just a few years older than I was, and she'd been a journalist. And while she was there, she wrote an article about this for the Daily Mirror. I think she got some criticism from some of the things she said for this article in the Daily Mirror. But we certainly had a great deal of fun there and learnt quite a lot, I think, which was useful afterwards. I think it lasted 3 months.
Were there people from the Friends Relief Service at this stage?
There were. There were two of us, yes, both of us. We had a lot of joint ventures. I think transport and some of the cooks, and certainly that training course was joint FRS. Yeah, I remember that Roger Wilson was there, because Roger Wilson has just died.
Well, was there a difference, do you think, between the FAU and the FRS?
There wasn't much difference between the people. There was difference between the organisation. FRS was mainly based in air raid shelters and doing jobs, civilian jobs in this country. And the majority of FAU people who were men went abroad pretty quickly. But I think as far as the people were concerned, they were very similar.
They weren't more absolutist than the FAU?
I don't think so. No. No, I don't think that would be true. Perhaps there were more Quakers in FRS. There was quite a lot of interchanging, because when the FAU couldn't send teams abroad and couldn't use them, they would sometimes second them to FRS, and I think FRS probably seconded people to the unit. I'm not sure about that. So there was a good deal of interchange, and a lot of sections were joint. Certainly the hostels were. After I'd been in Mount Wartham, we also used to call that Phoenix Park, because it was supposed to be Phoenix rising from the ashes. That was a good emblem for relief work, I think. I think after that I worked in Princess Elizabeth Hospital for Children in London. There were two branches of it, and I think I worked in both of them. One was in Shadwell, and the other one, I'm not sure whether that was the one near the docks. And they were both in the East End of London. And this was routine. They were both hospitals entirely for children, and we worked in the wards as nurses. I was on the casualty department, I remember, in Shadwell. I was in that department, I think, when a landmine landed very near the hospital. I remember that all the glass, all the windows in the hospital, a lot of them anyway, were broken, and I remember that all the glass fell on the children's beds, and we had to just sweep it off, although the children, I don't remember that any of them were injured. But we had a flood of casualties. We were a children's hospital, but they flooded in from everywhere. And I was sent down to casualty to cope with this lot. There were some people who were very upset, and some who were very badly injured. And we sort of dealt with all of these people as quickly as we could. I don't think we always took very adequate notes either of what we were doing. I remember one priest who had been cut quite badly and was bleeding quite profusely and was trying to comfort other people, which I think was a mistake because he looked so badly hurt. And some people who were badly hurt didn't make very little fuss, and other people were really screaming. This was a sort of cultural difference. I think it was the East End of London. There were quite a few nationalities there even then. But I remember when they tried to check up what had happened to some of these people the next day when they came back for treatment, I don't think we always had very good records.
And this was while you were waiting to go overseas, was it?
Well, yes, but it was also worthwhile service in itself. I think everything we did trained us for going abroad. I remember being there one Christmas and having quite a nice time with children. Children always have quite a nice time in hospital at Christmas. They still do. Do you want me to talk about any individual children I remember? I remember one child who had probably a cancer of the brain, I imagine. She was 2 or 3, and she had been in hospital, I think, all her life. They had removed one of her eyes. I think she was blind. And because she'd never had any sort of socialising training, she just sort of defecated all over the bed every day. And I remember being pretty horrified with this. Why, having been in hospital all that long time, she hadn't had any sort of toilet training at all. But of course, nurses don't do that sort of thing. And at that time, nurses had a terrible habit of making the beds over the children and talking to each other. And there was one nurse training in this hospital who was, in fact, a friend. She was a Quaker. She came from Blackpool, whom I've known her ever since. And she was a real education to me because when you made the beds with this nurse, you talked to the children all the time. As soon as you came to their bed, you talked to them about making their bed, and you talked to them about what they were doing and what they were going to play with. And I was very impressed by this, and afterwards always did this myself to all patients, because there is nothing worse than having two people standing over you talking about their boyfriends of the previous night when you know nothing about it and you feel completely isolated. And it gives you an opportunity to get to know the patients. And I was very impressed by this girl, and she did go on to become a very good nurse, I'm sure.
So that was another satisfying piece of your work, was it, Pip?
Oh, yes, it was. I enjoyed working in the Children's Hospital, and it was a good service for itself.
Did you find it was useful when you got to Germany? You know, I know you're going to tell me about that later, but was that training good for you, do you think?
Well, I suppose it always was. It's certainly been useful since, but I didn't use it very much in Germany. Not really. Relief work on the whole is very different from being in a medical team, and this was a training that would have been useful, I think, in a medical team. But some medical knowledge was always useful.
So did you go abroad after that?
No, I didn't. I think at some point I went to something which the FAU called the Midland Assembly Depot. It was a preparation for people about to go in relief terms abroad. I think it was Selly Oak House. It was the home of Christopher Taylor, and I remember the local friends were a bit horrified with having this house called the Midland Assembly Depot, or MAD, which is what they thought it was. They couldn't see any reason why a good Quaker house should be called by such a ridiculous name. And I remember the men were getting ready to go abroad, and the women weren't able to be placed. And I remember spending all my time sewing on labels onto clothing, sewing on name tags and doing that sort of thing, which I suppose I was probably better at than the men were. But I was a bit sorry that I wasn't going as well.
Did you get frustrated that the men were going and you weren't? You know, did it seem unfair at all?
Well, I very much wanted to go, but I think I always enjoyed my time. I always enjoyed my life. I didn't think I felt terribly frustrated, no. I think
it seems
I just accepted.
They were treated differently from the women, in as much that they were going.
Well, I think it was what the army or the Red Cross would accept. I think it was quite difficult to get women relief workers